Someone has to stay with the horses.
Why me, Dad?
Because I say so, Dean.
Why not the youngest of the Indians?
They were around 600 yards from the stalled war wag, in the middle of a grove of elders.
You do it, Dean, just because I tell you to do it. Now, if you don't like that, then get right on your pinto and ride away from me.
Dad!
I mean it, boy. You know I mean it. There isn't time to discuss what's wrong and what's right, son. This is the razor edge between living and not living. I can't risk one of the general's people circling us and taking out our mounts. That happens, and we don't get to win.
Oh, so if someone comes, I chill him?
With that 9mm Browning cannon of yours. Don't wait until it's too late. Better you shoot too soon and miss and warn us than holding fire and not giving us time to get back here, all right?
Sure, Dad.
Ryan patted his son on the shoulder.
Good, Dean. That's real good.
The wind had freshened, driving away the banks of sullen clouds that had been veiling the moon. The land was bathed in a silver light, making the approach of the bogged-down wag a good deal more dangerous. Man sees behind sun led the way, with the rest of them strung out in a ragged line. Ryan would have felt more comfortable with a proper skirmish approach, pausing now and again for the point man to go on wreck. But this attack wasn't in any sense under his command, and he had to force patience on himself. Christy was at his side when he voiced his doubts.
I just hope they don't go whooping in without any warning or word. Get us all a slice of the farm if they do.
You sound like the traitor when you say things like that, lover. A real lack of trust in anyone except yourself and those closest to you.
I guess that's true enough. Is that bad or good?
Christy shook her head, her fiery hair almost invisible in the darkness.
I can't say. We'll just have to wait and see which way the cards fall.
You feel anything?
No. You know that a firefight can't be read like that. Maybe a doomy could guess at what might happen. It's not my skill. I'll just have to wait.
It was an LAV-25. Originally built to take a crew of three, it had probably had a lot of its useless comm equipment stripped out to enable it to carry more men. Just as the young Navajo had said, the vehicle had slipped sideways off the muddy trail, halfway up a fairly steep incline, and slithered down into a quagmire, where the axles had vanished. It was in no danger, and a digging detail would have shifted it within 3 or 4 hours. Ryan finished checking the surrounding area with the night scope.
No guard.
JB studied the stranded vehicle.
Must figure they're safe enough this close to their home base. We got two choices.
Get them out and chill them, or leave them in and chill them. Sleeps and day. You got a preference for how we do it?
Preference. That is a word I do not know.
Means having to pick between two ways.
I would like to have them outside. It would be good to try and have prisoners to let us take some revenge.
Not really time for that. Just how far off is the General's HQ?
Close, Armorer. The main entrance to caverns is beyond the next hill.
So they could hear shooting?
The Native American put his head to one side, considering.
I think they would not. The wind comes up to us from the Grandee. It would carry noise away north from here.
Shame we got no grands. Open the lid and drop one in and watch him cook.
Yeah, agreed. But we don't.
We could do what has been done before.
Ryan looked at the Navajo.
What is that?
Set a fire around them.
I don't know about that. I reckon they must be aware there's some risk. Might be one of them on watch from the obslits or inside the turret. Can't see clearly enough to be certain of that.
There are 4 or 5 inside.
Christy looked toward the horizon.
Dawn will soon be on the way.
What is it, young pony runs?
I will crawl close, then knock on the walls of the wag. They come out and shoot me. I fall, and they look to see if I am dead. You hide close by and shoot them all.
Ryan blinked his good eye.
You mean to stand there and let them chill you?
Yes.
Ryan considered the idea, deciding that it wasn't a good combat option, with the likelihood that the defenders of the war wag would choose to stay snug inside.
No. I can't let you sacrifice your life just like that. Death in a firefight's one thing, but not this.
You cannot stop him.
Sure, sleeps and day, but I won't support it. There has to be a better plan than that.
No need big fire.
How do you mean, Jack?
Important thing is make think fire.
Dark night. Kids got it. Sorry, Jack. Slipped out.
Doc had been tracing invisible patterns in the sand with the ferrule of his sword stick.
Forgive me, ladies and gentlemen, but I fear that the young man's runic comments have quite flown over my head.
Jack's right, Doc. A big fire wouldn't work. It would take too long and risk being seen at the base. But if we lit a real small fire...
Doc grinned, his perfect set of teeth floating like a row of ghostly ivory in the darkness.
A little smoke, and they will believe we intend to burn them out. The frightening thought of remaining inside a potential oven will work wonders on their depraved minds, and...
Like rats from holes.
Exactly, two dogs. Jack, Mancy's behind Sun, come with me. JB, you and the others follow close behind. Pick your positions for close support.
Sounds good to me. You sleeps in day?
As long as we can count coup.
Once everyone knew what they were to do, everything clicked quickly into place.
Now remember, we're fucked if anyone opens fire too soon. Seems like four or five, and we know one of them's a woman. So be triple patient. Make sure that they're all out in the open.
Trader had used to say in that sort of situation that a man who pulled the trigger too hastily could reckon on killing some of his friends with the bullet. Ryan checked his wrist chron, knowing that JB would be doing the same, somewhere in the surrounding blackness, taking up the agreed positions in a loose circle around the LAV-25. Ryan had the only night sight and had handed over the Steyr rifle to Mildred as the finest shot among them. She should be able to pick off some of their enemies as they scrambled from the turret on the wag, while Ryan, with Mancy's behind Sun and Jack, should be close enough to take out the others. That was the idea. Despite the recent rains, it wasn't hard to find sun-dried branches of sagebrush and mesquite, and best of all, a cluster of creosote bushes. Moving with infinite care, Ryan and his companions dragged the clumps of vegetation along with them, closing in on the stalled vehicle.
Gas?
Yeah, Jack. Must have a small leak. That could help us.
It was only a dribble of crude gasoline, running into the sand between the rear wheels, but it would be helpful to get their fire going. They'd all been out in the night long enough for their eyes to have become reasonably accustomed to the darkness. When they got within a dozen yards of the bulk of the wag, they all kept still, watching intently, trying to decide if the general's people had anyone on watch. But there was no sign of movement around the turret. Ryan had figured that their chances were good, even if someone was watching from inside the wag. The big 25mm Bushmaster cannon would be far too clumsy to hit them at close range, and they would hear if anyone started to move the M240 coaxial machine gun to open fire on them. The only serious risk that he considered was someone with a small-caliber hand blaster firing from one of the ports on the side. But there was nothing.
They are asleep.
Ryan knew that there were two exits available on the LAV-25, one directly from the turret and the other nearer the front. If the plan worked, those inside were likely to come out either or both.
They'll probably come out both exits, son.
Who lights fire?
You. I'll take the top of the wag, and Jack can cover the front. But nobody does any chilling until we think everyone's out. That way we should get them all. Don't want anyone left, safe and snug inside, able to start firing the cannon and warning the general that he's under attack.
I have what you call self-ignites to begin the flames. Take all of the brush near to the gas leak.
Sure. Let's get everything in place for the fire. The others should be where they're supposed to be by now.
The armor metal was cool to the touch. Ryan climbed up, using the foot and handholds, taking the greatest care not to let his combat boots scrape on the hull of the wag. He knew from years of personal experience that any slight sound would be magnified to those inside. He stood for a moment, steadying himself on the top of the turret, looking out toward the horizon and seeing the pale glow of the false dawn. Time was moving too fast. Ryan gently tested the handle on the hatch, but wasn't surprised to find it bolted shut from within. There was a flicker of movement ahead of him as Jack swung himself up over the protruding front of the wag. Everything was ready. Time seemed to stop as Ryan sat down and waited for the action to begin. He'd readied himself mentally, steadying his breath and slowing his heartbeat. There would be blood on his hands in the next 5 minutes, as there had been 100 times before. Perhaps his own blood. His sensitive hearing caught the tiny scratching sound of a self-light. Almost instantly, his nostrils detected the scent of fire, the arid bitterness of desert smoke, overlaid with gasoline, and the odor of the sagebrush. Jack was a scant 8 feet ahead of him.
Now!
A tiny flame became visible between the tops of the bogged-down tires. Under the vehicle, growing stronger, the smoke was now visible in the darkness. Ryan saw Mancy's behind Sun move out from the fire that he'd lit, jogging a few yards and crouching behind a boulder, becoming instantly invisible. Now the tension was rising. 15 years ago, Ryan had sat with Trader, both men leaning against a tree near the crest of a hill. The older man with his Armalite, while Ryan had been holding a pump-action Remington 870 scatter gun. They'd been hunting somewhere up around the Cascades when they realized that they had become trapped between two bunches of stickies. They didn't know how many there were in either party, but they knew the muties were closing in on them like the jaws of a nutcracker, so all they could do was sit and wait. Trader had picked a daisy from a clump near his boots and was gently plucking it apart, petal by petal, peering at it, as though he were admiring the wonders of nature. Ryan had never forgotten that moment. Now, with the wisdom of age, he realized that the trader had been doing it partly for his benefit, demonstrating just how calm and unworried he was by the imminent threat from the Wolf's Head bands of muties. As the first of the stickies breasted the rise, unaware of the presence of the two norms, Trader had dropped what remained of the flower and dusted his hands clean before ripping the muties apart with a burst from the Armalite. Ryan had never even touched the trigger on his shotgun. And now here he was, waiting once more to spill the lifeblood of enemies. The fire was growing now, the flames and smoke thickening around the stranded wag. It could only be a matter of seconds before someone inside smelled the danger through the vent ports.
What the fuck? Hey, there's a fucking fire someplace. Outside or in here?
¿Quién es?
Get your foot out of my fucking face, will you?
Ryan had the Sig Sauer cocked in his right hand, balancing himself and waiting. Jack wore his satin-finished Colt Python in its holster, but Ryan guessed that he might choose to rely on the assortment of leaf-bladed throwing knives that he kept concealed on his person. Man sees behind Sun had been carrying a sawed-down shotgun of indeterminate age and make. The smoke was thicker now, wreathing up, almost white in the darkness of early morning.
We're gonna be burned! It's those fucking Indians! Get to the hatches!
Ryan readied his powerful handgun, flattening himself down behind the turret, where a quick glance wouldn't be likely to spot him in the smoke and blackness. He figured the general's troops weren't likely to take too much time and care looking around before getting out of what must seem like a death trap.
What the fuck is going on here?
The only person, out of more than 20 involved in the brief skirmish, who was able to see what was happening was Dr. Mildred Wyeth. She'd found a good prone shooting position and rested the barrel of the Steyr between two large sandstone boulders, the polished walnut stock cradled against her shoulder. A 7.62mm round was already under the pin, and her right eye was pressed to the rubber-edged sight. She'd seen Ryan climb slowly onto the rectangular bulk of the war wag and hunker behind the turret and back of the big gun. Jack moved into her range of vision like a snake, his white hair as bright as a magnesium flare with the starlight enhancer. He was sitting cross-legged, just at the back of the forward hatch. As far as Mildred could make out, the teenager wasn't holding any sort of weapon. The Navajo was crouched near the bundles of brush that all three men had dragged to the wag. The scope didn't give anything like full daylight clarity, with the figures slightly fogged and blurred, but it was still 100 times better than the darkness that Mildred saw every time she removed her eyes from the sight. The flame was extremely bright, making her blink, the fire spreading quickly, bands of smoke uncoiling like clouds of white chiffon. She moved her focus slightly.
John, Doc, everybody, get ready. Any moment now. Here they come.
What the fuck is going on here?
Mildred's index finger curled around the narrow trigger, taking up the first pressure. At the level of pistol shooting where she'd represented the old United States in the Atlanta Olympics of 1996, everyone knew that you spaced your shots to coincide with the momentary gaps between the beats of the heart. This kind of shooting didn't need that sort of hair-breadth accuracy. The range was less than 50 yards, and the targets were all close to 6 feet high. A man was out of the front, sliding down and looking around. He held a rifle of some sort. The first person who emerged from the turret was also a man, followed by a short, naked person that Mildred guessed was male, though she couldn't be sure.
Three out.
The last of them had stooped to peer under the wag, shouting something to the others, but the words were inaudible. Mildred guessed he was trying to warn them that it was a false alarm, but the first couple was already sprinting, their heads back, arms pumping, toward a bosque of live oaks, about 100 yards away near the skyline. Mildred drew a bead on the first of them, centering the sight on the pale shirt the man wore, conscious at the same moment that a woman with very long hair was just clambering out of the turret, right beside Ryan. The one-eyed warrior kept count. One left from the turret and a pair from the front. That left one or two, depending on the count of man sees behind sun. The odor of smoke and the stink of rancid sweat wafted up to Ryan from the open hatch. Human bodies, packed together, smelled rank and feral.
Oh!
Pinche culo!
The woman suddenly surged up from the hatch. There was just enough light for Ryan to see that she was completely naked, her back to him. Mildred saw her target go down. As she shifted her aim, it was some sort of a scuffle on top of the wag. The short, nude man was looking toward her, raising a blaster. Jack was up on his feet, steadying himself against the cannon, like an Avenger from a comic book, his mouth open, hair blowing in the night wind. Steel flickered in his right hand, and the short man dropped his rifle, his hands going to clutch at the knife in his throat. Ryan readied himself to kill the woman. Some sixth sense must have told her that he was behind her. She flinched back with her right arm, catching him across the wrist, sending the Sig Sauer spinning into the blackness. Mildred saw her own clean kill through the scope sight. The bullet had hit the running man through the head, an inch behind his right ear, blowing away most of the left side of his face. Despite the neural control room being destroyed, the message didn't seem to have reached the man's legs, which carried on sprinting for safety. Arterial blood jetted from the gaping hole, black in the moonlight.
Like a headless chicken, eh, Millie?
It was several seconds before the corpse dropped to the ground like a bundle of dirty rags. Mildred turned the sight from left to right, seeing that the three men from the wag were all down and dead, but that Ryan seemed to be having trouble with the naked woman. Ryan had been ready for a simple execution, and her frenzy had taken him completely by surprise. Her body glistened with sweat, and Ryan's nostrils were flooded with the rutting smell of recent sex. There was enough light for him to make out something of her features. Thick lips, spittle dribbling between them, a narrow nose, and heavy, dark eyebrows. She was braced, the lower part of her body still inside the turret, keeping herself in place on the ladder, clawing at Ryan with long, strong fingers. He was far less steady, perched on top of the wag, the metal slippery with dew, and her attack was difficult to repel. One hand raked across his face, nearly snagging the patch off his missing eye. It was one of the dark night horrors for Ryan, that something sharp might gouge out the raw socket. He jerked back from her and managed a short clubbing right to the side of her jaw. But the punch wasn't delivered with full force and had little effect.
Puta!
She hit at Ryan with the edge of her left hand, catching him a glancing blow on the side of the neck. An inch or two farther back and a little harder, and he'd have been rolling unconscious off into the dirt. An elbow aimed at his groin narrowly missed its target as he half-turned and took it on the thigh.
Want hip, Ryan?
Fuck this!
Ryan brought his left hand around, smashing the forearm into her open mouth. Her teeth opened up a gash just below his elbow.
Again!
The blow had briefly stunned the woman and given him a moment to reach for the hilt of the big panga. He drew the 18-inch blade from the greased leather sheath. He stabbed it into the woman's body, below her pendulous breasts, feeling the ease with which the needle point penetrated the flesh of her stomach, like a hot knife through a slab of butter. Blood gushed out, hot across his wrist and arm. Her head swayed back away from Ryan, and he could taste the bitterness of her bile, wrapped around her last evening meal of chilies, pork, and onions. With great effort, the wounded woman managed to heave herself out of the turret, flopping forward, where Jack bent over and slit her throat open from ear to ear. Jack pushed the twitching corpse into the damp earth below the wag.
That it?
The small fire was almost out, the smoke blowing toward the east. Ryan rubbed at the scraped wound on his arm, deciding that it wasn't worth binding up. In the last minutes, the light from the eastern sky seemed to have grown much stronger. Ryan could make out the figures of J.B., Christie, and the others coming slowly from cover. The young Navajo warrior, man sees behind sun, bounded toward the wag and vaulted lightly onto it. He slapped hands with Ryan, ignoring the congealing blood on the Anglo's fingers. Jack had dropped down and was retrieving his throwing knife from the neck of the dead man.
Lady gave you some trouble, partner.
You can do the business next time. She knocked my blaster out of my hand. Can you get it for me?
Sure.
Man sees behind sun was kneeling by the open hatch.
It smells of wickedness.
That's not what I'd have called it. Plenty of other things.
We could free this wag.
No, son. It's too late.
I will look inside. There might be blasters or food we could eat.
Ryan reached out and took the Sig Sauer out of JB's hand. The Navajo leaned down and peered into the darkness inside the wag.
I will go in.
Watch out. Could be grins or anything in there.
But the warrior was already climbing down, feeling with his feet on the steel ladder.
Tell my brothers I count the first coup.
Now only his head and shoulders were visible.
This is...
With a startling violence, the young man disappeared.